Hello.
Hello, welcome.
Hello, welcome to Cooking with Kent today. to Goth and Bougie podcast.
That's good stuff.
It's episode 42.
42.
True crime. True crime week.
Yep.
I got a doozy.
We're always cooking. Well, I'm always cooking.
Belle's always cooking. Belle's always cooking.
My food.
Yes, and it's always good food. So today we're having...
burnt toast.
No! Mine isn't burned. And cheese ravioli?
Yes, it's very simple today because
it's fine.
We were out at the lake this weekend because it was beautiful weather.
It was nice weather.
Yes. So, have I told you that we're moving back there full time?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I've told everybody else, but yeah, we're going back there full time because we love it. It's beautiful. Save money so we can move. Quit our jobs and move out of country. We've talked about that.
Yes.
I don't know what we're going to do.
Guys, we don't make money doing the podcast. No, I might think we do, but we don't. We just do this because we love each other, and it's like a de-stressor for us.
Mm-hmm. So this one releases on the 22nd.
Look at you being all...
I know.
Belle threw me in shock mode today. She's like on top of shit.
I felt like I needed to be more involved.
I like that you're being more involved.
I felt a little guilty.
I have
that's just for this week. Next week, I'll be like again.
I have less time now, though.
I'm going to...
just for this week?
Yeah, it's just this week. Next week, I'm going to be like, I don't know. What are we doing again? I don't know.
But I appreciate it. Guys, next week, we are going to be live.
Mm-hmm.
So, you will not be able to watch us live unless you're a patron on Patreon. Yep. Just going to throw that out now. I'll remind you later. But anyways.
Next week. No, this one doesn't release the 22nd. This one releases the 18th.
This week, Friday.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then the episode that when we actually record will be the 22nd. And that's when we're going live.
Right, so you get to watch us live and watch the shit show live.
And that is, we're going to be recording the serial killer episode. Mm-hmm. And I've got a good one. I've already got it down.
Okay.
It's my serial killer. Yes. And then the week after that, we will be in New Orleans.
I'm so excited.
Yes, Goth and Bougie World Tour has had to scale back a little bit.
Mm. Remind me to talk to you at that when we get done recording it. Because I called Royal Caribbean.
You called who?
Royal Caribbean.
Oh, okay, yes.
Yes.
Hopefully we get some
good
perks out of...
No, we don't.
Shut up.
Because we had a free cruise.
Shut up.
No.
Shut up. Do we even get a rescheduling?
Nope. I know. We get our money back, though. So I asked him when we'll be back. So anyways, we'll talk about it after the show. I knew I needed to
change something. You can't just spring that on me.
You'll be fine.
The fuck? Anyway, that's okay. We're going to New Orleans instead, and it's better.
Yes, we're going to have a badass time.
Fuck you, Royal Caribbean.
Oh my God, I cannot wait.
Royal Caribbean.
We need this. We need this.
Sucks.
Girl,
don't,
guys,
don't
after 30-plus years, no, I love Royal Caribbean. After 30-plus years of us being friends, like, we've never gone on a trip together. We went to band trips.
Band camp.
We, like, went to Houston and, like, band trips and stuff. But, like, that was it. Like, just the band trips. But, like, that was, like, so fat. Yeah. So how has your week been?
I mean,
at the lake and...
I started a Pinterest.
You told me. Man.
And I know.
Ah, you got all kinds of shit starting up. I'm like, what's wrong with you?
And I started a separate Instagram.
I know.
And I have scheduled another photo shoot with somebody, which it's going to happen.
Finally.
November 7th.
Finally, so I'm rubbing
while,
off on
it's
you.
It's a while away, but it's because I have to prepare with all the props and the costume and everything, but hopefully it'll turn out as good as it is in my mind on film. We'll see.
I bet it will.
It is a photographer who we're going to collaborate and have a good time together. We're going to go out in the woods, so that's going to be fun.
Oh, it's going to be so good.
Yeah.
It's going to be witchy.
Well, the Pinterest was mainly for me to start putting ideas for the photo shoot,
because
otherwise I do not join bandwagons. Like you with TikTok.
I love TikTok.
Oh my God.
Y'all. I love my TikTok.
Oh my God, y'all.
That's so addictive. I tortured Bella, made her watch a few of them.
You, not only did you make
chicken
me watch
wing,
them
chicken
here.
Chicken wing, hot dog and bologna.
She sends
chicken
them
and macaroni,
to me
chilling
all
with
day. I wake up to messages from her with her fucking TikToks.
You love me.
And all I can do is respond and say, oh my God, you and your TikToks.
They're so fun.
Some of them are really fun. Some of them I'm like...
They're just funny.
Whatever.
So it just makes, it like, literally, like, it's such a de-stressor because it lets me, like, It's like my outlet.
Is there a lot involved in making one? Like,
oh my God.
I saw one of my friends posted, like, it's like, wait, it's too much work for him. He's like, so, it's too much work.
It is a lot of work. So, like, the one that I did the wardrobe change because of what happened at the other project, like what we talked about, I told you. We'll talk about it probably next time we record. Like, maybe next time. I don't know. Or today. I don't know. So, I'm tired of people telling me what I can and can't wear.
Yes. Like, I was about to say, fuck that. We're talking about it right now.
It's my body. I wear what I want to wear. My other podcast, I love them dearly. But they basically were like, so I got sent unsolicited dick pics.
Mm-hmm. Me too. This one guy sent me a video of horses fucking.
But like, they think when we get dick pics, we're like looking at it like, oh, it's a dick. It's got things. No, I'm like, ew.
Delete. And
I love dick. I don't want to look at your dick. If I'm with somebody, that's different. But, like, not just some random person. I didn't even know who this person was.
I wanted to ask that the guy who sent me the video of the horses fucking, if that actually worked in getting any type of response. But I don't want to respond to any of them.
I had to block and delete them. Yeah, I delete
immediately.
Immediately. Like, I don't even respond to them. I did respond to this one guy.
Hey, baby, want to sex?
No, dear.
Want to sex?
No, I can't. And so basically they said the way that I dress and the way that I am, it's that I'm basically asking
for these
dick pics.
What do you expect? Yeah.
And I'm like,
no.
That doesn't give anybody the right to, that's like me just sending random people boob shots. I don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm with somebody and I'm like being flirty with that person I'm with, like a significant other or a boyfriend or whatever, and I want to send them a picture of my tit, like, because I'm frisky.
You could post a picture of yourself topless right now, and it's still not saying
to anyone that
you have permission to now send me solicit a dick pic. Me.
Right.
It does not mean that at all.
And it just pissed me off to know it. Like, I was getting so frustrated. I'm like, we got to change the subject because I'm about to fucking go off right now on y'all. That it's okay for me to post whatever I want to post. I worked hard for my body.
You don't even have to but that's what I'm telling you, Mel. You don't even have to have worked hard for your body.
Right.
It's your body. Exactly. You can do what you want to with it, and it doesn't give anyone permission to approach you in any manner,
especially a sexual manner.
Other than respectfully.
Right. So, I mean, but on TikTok, like, I love making my videos. But that one video, the first one where I went from pinup girl to, like, I said my bad girl look.
Like goth slut?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, that took 3 hours because I didn't know how to do it. So, like, I figured it out. So, last time when I got home Friday night for recording, I was like, fuck this shit. I said, I'm going to fucking make a TikTok with my bad girl slutty goth on. So I had my, like, basic stuff on and went into my...
But even then, that outfit wasn't... I don't think anything was wrong with that outfit.
Exactly.
There was nothing wrong with it.
Exactly.
I'm all about women owning who they are. You do you. Whatever makes you happy. Does not give anyone permission to approach you or make judgments about you in any fucking way.
At 44 years old, I know who I am. I know what I like. I know myself better now than I've known myself ever in my entire life.
On the personal Instagram I made, I posted the one of like my butt.
Yeah.
You see my bare butt?
It's your thing.
Yeah, I told my husband, I'm like, there's some people. Yes, I know. I'm putting photos out there of myself. Yes, I do want attention. That's why I'm putting them out there. I'm confident. I like other people thinking that I'm attractive or I look nice or whatever, especially if they like that aesthetic, that's great. But still, you approach somebody respectfully. I've had people message me like, oh, I love your aesthetic. You're so beautiful.
Yes.
Fine, thank you. And then they're like, oh, you know, this one person asked me, it was really funny. He said, how did you get your background to look like you were in a mansion with candles? I said, that's a photo set. That's actually a set in a studio here in Dallas. The candles are real. Oh, that's real. He was like, oh, that is so cool. Yeah, it's not a photo. I thought it was really funny. But, you know, that's fine. You want to say, hey, how'd you do that?
Yeah,
you
like it?
Or even saying you're beautiful or...
Yeah, I don't mind that. I appreciate that. But a lot of times I do it because I'm more confident now than I've ever been. I mean, you know, you've known me my whole life almost pretty much.
You've always been very quiet.
So, being able to get out and do that and be myself, I love it. Because I don't have anybody to answer to except myself. I don't do it for anybody else. I do it for myself.
It's yourself, yeah.
And there's even, like, we've had people that follow us on our Facebook page stuff. Like, I can't believe y'all, I love that y'all did that. And I wish I had that confidence. Mm-hmm. it may give them the confidence to go out and, oh my God, let me go do that. Mel did that. I feel like I can do it.
Our women listeners. Yes. I love our guy listeners too. Don't want to say don't listen to us.
But we're empowering women. Yes. We're boss babes.
There's one statement. Yes. And says, so, empowered women empower women.
Yes.
So we are all about finding that within yourself and putting it out there. Be confident. And yeah, you're gonna get some people who say some fucked up shit. Mm-hmm. Like, I got one guy who said to me, I really love fat chicks. Okay, so don't fucking talk to me. I don't care.
Yeah.
Don't, that's what, and that works for you?
No, I get, are you single? Are you da-da-da? I just block them. Like, I just block those people.
Oh, I get
people.
Plenty of those, too. I'm just saying, you're definitely going to get some offensive people.
Yes, yeah. But it still does not give them the right to do that. And they're basically saying, they have, I'm asking for it. Mm-hmm. I said, that's not any different than me standing on a street corner and I have on a turtleneck and jeans, or I have on very low midriff and, like, booty shorts and flip-flops. Either way, if someone's going to rape me, they're going to rape me.
Yes, and what you wear is your choice.
It's my choice, and it's my body. Mm-hmm. And if you don't like it, don't fucking look at it. Mm-hmm. That's how I look now. And it cracks me up, because, like, even on my Instagram now, like, I see my mom, because she's very conservative. We've had this conversation. She's very conservative, like, whatever. She likes all my TikToks that I post, and then it cracks me up, because I know she's cracking up laughing.
It's not when your parents come around.
Because she's just like, I mean, she, I don't think she's came around. She's like, oh, my God, you and some of the stupid shit you do. Because she just knows, like, she knows, like, it's just my outlet and that it's my creativity and that I'm a creative person. I'm very artsy. I like that kind of stuff and I like to dance. So it lets me be me. And that's why I like it. So it's
I always say I'm an introverted extrovert.
You are. Mm-hmm. It depends on the situation you're in. Me, you know, I just go talk to anybody. I don't freaking care.
I'll talk to them, but then I'm very much separate. Like, to me, it's almost like I'm only giving you the top layer of me.
Yeah.
So, but on, like, on this show is the most real I ever get. So if you listen to our show, you're definitely hearing more of the real me than you would have ever gotten had you met the me at a club or something like that.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because I keep that at the top layer only, and that's really it. Because I don't get that involved with people.
No, I don't like. Yeah. I'm an introvert when I go to the store, like we've talked before. Like, I don't like people talking to me at the store. Like, don't talk to me, criminal. Like, I'm like, don't talk to me.
Yeah, it is my goal to always have a resting bitch face. To just like, don't look at me.
But I'm gonna get you on TikTok someday.
Our masks have the goat head from a pentagram on our masks. We went to Dairy Queen in Quinlan, and the drive-thru was too long, so we actually went inside. And this woman was staring.
It's a Bible belt.
Yes, Bible belt. And we love to fucking offend people. I love it. And she's staring at my mask.
Did you wave at her? Hi.
No, so she can't see my eyes, because I can see her eyes are just slightly downcast, and she's looking at my mask. And I don't know if she quite figured out what it was, because it's not quite a pentagram. It's the ghost. Go ahead. It's Baphomet. And she's just staring at me, and I'm just staring at her right back. Like, the entire time I'm walking around looking at her right. And finally her eyes lift up, and she sees me staring at her. And she's like, oh, my God. And she starts looking
at me. You probably said, I put a spell on you.
Yeah, and then she's, like, talking to her husband.
And I am mine.
She's, like, whispering to her husband. And I see him look over, and I just glare at him, too. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, they probably thought you were putting a spell on them or something.
Let him. I know, it's so funny. Good for you. You know what? My dad, I tell my dad, he's like, what? My dad's not paying attention, of course, because he doesn't pay attention.
He was looking for all the cute girls.
Yeah, my dad just laughs. You know, Mr. Ordained Minister, he thinks it's the funniest shit. When he saw me put the mask on, he's like, oh, I love your mask. He thinks it's awesome. We like to offend.
It's not even offend. It's just people take things too seriously. And it's just, I just don't do that.
So. I had the guy at Starbucks ask me what was on my mask. Because then I said, I say.
He's the devil. Well,
what I say, because I've been asked by a couple people, I say it is a pagan deity, but that's not quite true. It's actually a satanic emblem, because it's the pentagram without the circle around it. It's the goat's head. But people tend to be like, oh, okay, cool, paganism, cool. But Robert and I are card-carrying members of the Satanic Temple, people wouldn't take too kindly to that. Because as soon as you hear Satan, they think, oh, my God.
Yeah.
No, it's not that. The Satanic Temple is nothing about Satan, actually.
I know. But it just, people just, you're talking to someone that was raised in a Southern Baptist church, and people, like, I'm just not.
You should have, I wish I'd been there with you when they were saying that shit to you on the podcast.
You could have called in.
I wasn't listening. I don't listen to your other
it's
podcasts.
It's fine. No, it's fine. Like, I was just so done
it's
at that point.
It's not my type
so
of show.
I still go and record every Friday, and that's all I do, and then I'll post them on social media. But, like, I was just so floored.
Like, I feel like you're kind of outnumbered.
I can handle myself when it comes to them, so I don't feel like I'm outnumbered, but they could tell, like, I was getting pissed off, like, that last time.
And no listener came to your defense?
People were posting stuff on there, but a lot of people think that we're joking around. Like, they all think it's, like, joking, like, you know, it's improv comedy,
you're
and
laughing
it's fine.
And, stuff, and it seems like you're giving each other a hard time.
Right. Yeah. And, but, like, afterwards, I mean, I just was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, that isn't, I said, it's the same thing. I said, it doesn't give them the right to do any of that stuff. So, yeah.
That's why I couldn't be on another show like that, because I would have been like, I'm done with you. Because I don't have tolerance for people. I don't know. I just would have been like, I'm never coming back. I don't have to listen to you be that way to me.
Right.
And you're a little more tolerant like that.
I am. I'm very tolerant. I'm a very tolerant person.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't know. We'll see what happens. I love the guys that are on there. They're fun, whatever, but...
But unfortunately, it shows that underlying ideology that a lot of people have, not just men, but a lot of people have in general, that is the culture of slut-shaming, victim-blaming.
Yes.
That just, it still permeates our society.
It
and
does.
It's fucked up.
It does, and it's not okay.
No, it's not okay.
You know, and just, I don't know, it just, if floored me, because that's not the response I was expecting from both of them.
Yeah.
And so I'm just like,
so it's, that's but why, you know what, it is still hard. I still struggle with it too. I see a woman, you know, dressed all, I say, oh, she's just like a fucking slut, she's just, you know, it's hard. It's something
hard.
You have to continuously
and my mom
fight
will
against.
Make my mom will make remarks, because that's their generation they were raised in. Oh my God, she's so big. She
yes,
shouldn't be wearing that. And I have to look
that
at my mom and say, Mom, why are you worried about it?
Although,
it's
wait,
her body.
That's a totally separate conversation, because I do believe that you should wear things flattering to you and your
I
body.
I understand that, but it's their body.
Yeah.
And why are you worried about it? Like, it's their
I'm
body.
I'm worried about it. I just think I would, if I were dressing them, I would dress them in something just as comfortable, just as sexy, just
right,
as, but a little more flattering to
right,
their
and
body.
And there are things that don't need, they, but I mean, that's yeah, not my business, mm-hmm, you know. So I mean, that's, if they're comfortable in their body, good for them. Mm-hmm. You know,
I'm all about you do you, boo.
Yeah,
you do
exactly.
You
exactly. So yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
I don't know. So that's pretty much it. But my, I'll tell you about my week. It's been nothing. I work.
I'm
I work
happy.
Two jobs.
You got a new job now, so that's
I
exciting.
I did, and I love her, and she's just, we laugh and we joke. It's just her and I.
That's great.
It right now. Eventually, we're going to hire her.
Yeah,
again.
But you're establishing the building blocks of that entire business.
Oh,
so
I know.
You are there.
But it feels
at the ground.
So good, yeah, because she came in Friday, and her husband was there last week. When we were just setting everything up, whatever, kind of get to know each other. We started seeing patients last week, so this is our third week. And her husband, she came Friday, she said her husband and her were talking about me at home, and so she came in and she said, I'm not going to say his name on the air.
You should have just said, oh yeah, do you listen to Goth and Bougie?
They know I have a podcast. I told them. So, because I always tell, I'm pretty open, because I mean, it's going to come out that I do it, so I don't like lie to anybody.
Let's name her husband Steve.
Okay, so Steve, she said, she came in, she said, so Steve said that we just lucked out by finding you.
Aww.
That we are so lucky to have you, and that we seriously lucked out by getting you. And that made me feel so good, like, because
appreciated.
Yes, because mm-hmm, you just don't get that a lot, you yeah know. And she was with a huge group, went to private practice, so I've been there,
mm-hmm,
so I know. But like, we're just learning like the system together and stuff, and so it's just, I don't know, it's just really, really good. Everything's really good, and we're getting busier and busier. I told her we're gonna get busier. Are you sure? I promise you, we're gonna get busier
back
and busier.
Up. Totally, yes.
We're gonna get busier, mm-hmm, and busier. And now, like, there's no other derms around us where our office is, so mm-hmm, it's just really nice. But yes, I'm establishing the practice, and it's just nice. But like, mm-hmm, the today we were so, like, this morning was the busiest we've been.
I can tell you're busy. You're totally not promoting us as much. I'm having to step up and do some shit.
I'm sorry.
It was our agreement in the bylaws.
I've been posting every day on our stuff.
Page 32 of the bylaws that Belle does not have to do as much shit as Mel.
Mel said it all through season one.
Whole shit show was Mel's idea. See, it says right there.
No. Yeah, but you love the shit show. I love the shit show. I'm still trying to post at least once a day on all of our platforms and stuff. Mm-hmm. I just may not get back to you guys, like, right away. I try, but it'll be later on in the evenings. But then I go home and I work my second job, filling from home, so.
And then you do your third job, which is your podcast.
Which is my podcast. Mm-hmm. And so, which isn't really a job because it's a free, it's volunteering more. Because we, guys, we really don't make money. Like, y'all think we do. Make 3 cents a listen.
Yeah.
Come on now.
This has been a long intro, but it's been good.
We had a short episode last week.
Yeah, and next week we're going to tell you guys some more information about, we're going to be restructuring our patron tiers. We're going to be throwing out some new merchandise. We're going to be getting onto YouTube. So there's lots of exciting things coming up at the closure of our first season.
Woo!
And
oh
the
my God,
start of our second season.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's been a year.
So then let's go ahead and get into our content.
And we have
for this
some
week.
Badass. We have a badass picture for our background next week. So we're really freaking missing out.
don't even think about it.
Our patrons will get a picture of it before.
Yes. Our patrons always get early access to everything.
It is freaking badass. Yeah.
So this week is true crime.
It's true crime.
And we're both sharing a story. My story is kind of short.
What's your turn first?
Yes, it is my turn first. So let me move this over so I can read my story.
I did my serial killer last week. And thank you guys for all of y'all that have listened. We have so many listens. It's only Tuesday. We already have like 50 listens. And that's like really good.
Yes. And we've actually hit 3,600 total.
Yes, total listens. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. So we have $36. Literally, I'm not...
But like, we've made us enough from Patreon and our Anchor sponsorship to pay for our hotels in New Orleans.
So we can bring you guys an amazing show.
Yes, so we're going to be recording on location and coming to you live while we're there. So it's going to be exciting.
And maybe from a haunted, something haunted.
Hush. So let's get into our story. So my story this week is about Glenna Brooke Pinkerton from Donelson, Tennessee.
Okay.
And the tragic murder of her one-year-old baby.
Oh, now you're talking about kids getting killed.
Yes, I know. Let me finish.
Okay.
You have to agree not to ask me any questions.
Let me lock and key it again. Okay.
You can comment, but don't ask me any questions or
can I have the burnt piece
what's
of bread?
The word? Yes, of course. Or hypothesize anything about this crime. Because you have to let it play out. Okay? So, I'm waiting for Mel to get back with her burnt toast. I apparently forgot to tell my husband that the oven was on broil. And we burnt our toast.
PETA wasn't watching the bread.
PETA. So, in the spring of 2017, Glenna Brooke Pinkerton gave birth to a beautiful baby daughter in Donelson, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. For the span of a year, she apparently lived a normal life with her baby and her ex-boyfriend. What I don't know is if he was her boyfriend at the time or he became her ex-boyfriend. I don't know anything about the dissolution of that relationship.
That's not the baby's dad.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, that was a year. Then, the unspeakable happened. In March of 2018, Glenna's ex-boyfriend murdered the baby. Mm. And Glenna assisted in burying her body near a creek.
So the baby's dad murdered her.
Yes. Okay. And spoke nothing of it again until March of this year. So this happened March of 2018. So in March of this year.
2020.
Yes. During a phone conversation with her brother, Ronald Pinkerton, Glenna confessed to the horrific story of the murder and of burying her daughter. Ronald was quite disturbed by this. Mm-hmm. So on March 6th, he made a phone call to the Metro Nashville Police Department and reported it. He told them that his sister says that she buried her one-year-old daughter in a park near her home on Cabin Hill Road in Nashville. The very next day, the Metro Nashville Police located Glenna. Mm-hmm. She's now 32 years old, and they brought her in for questioning. At first, she was resistant, but then during the interrogation, she told the detectives that in March of 2018, she had, in fact, witnessed her infant daughter be fatally shot in the head by her ex-boyfriend, Antonio Allen, and that she assisted him to then take her body to Two Rivers Park and buried her in a shallow grave there. She then also agreed to take the detectives to where the baby was buried. So Glenna led detectives to a specific part of Two Rivers Park and said this is where her daughter was buried. Mm-hmm. The detectives called in forensic investigators and cadaver dogs, who subsequently swarmed the area in search of the infant's corpse. After an exhaustive search, however, no human remains could be recovered. So they're asking her again, where is the baby's body? This is clearly not where she is. She's not here. So then Glenna said, okay, I have to tell you more.
Oh, no. And then?
And then.
What happened was?
Glenna then confessed that the entire story was made up.
Wait, what?
There was no body because there was no murder. There was no murder because there was no baby. And there was no baby because there was no pregnancy. She had made up the entire story of being pregnant, having a baby, having a daughter, having the man shoot her daughter in the head, and having buried her daughter. She made it all
up. Why would she make this up?
So, next sentence. When she was questioned as to why she would do that, why she would put her brother through that, you know, turmoil, and why she would lead the police on a wild goose hunt, she merely shrugged and said, I did it for attention, I guess. She was arrested and charged with giving a false police report.
Yeah.
So it's unclear exactly why she specifically singled out her ex-boyfriend in the shooting and burial of this non-existent baby.
Maybe that's why they broke up. Because she's crazy.
And the police report doesn't specify whether this supposed shooting was fake intentional or fake accidental. And the Nashville Police Department declined to further comment on the case. So that's all fucked up.
What the hell?
But this is not like unusual. We've heard before people faking pregnancies and stuff. So that's a picture of her.
Yeah. I mean, you hear that, but not, oh, she's a meth head.
She's fucked up.
She's clearly a meth
head. So then there's this other story, which is just as fucked up.
Oh, are you done with that one?
I'm done with that one. Okay. That's all the story I have for that one. So in 2019, this was just this last year, there was a Pennsylvania couple, Jeffrey and Casey Lang. Mm-hmm. They also allegedly faked the birth and the death of their newborn son.
I can't.
But this time, it wasn't just for no reason. It was to in order to specifically scam money out of people. So from unsuspecting family, friends, and strangers who believed they were helping the family out with medical and funeral bills. The child never existed, but they invented the pregnancy. They even staged a photo of a child's doll, like one of those newborn dolls that look like they're called
something.
You know what I'm talking about? They look like a real fucking baby.
Yeah, we have one in our house.
Do you really have one of them? Oh, that really. Oh, I want to see it. I want to squish it and hold it. They uploaded it to Facebook. They uploaded it to GoFundMe, and it was to deceive strangers and people they knew to get the money. So they even posted on the picture. It said, our son Easton was born with fluid in his lungs and passed away a few hours after he was born.
Which you don't die with fluid. I mean, he probably had, you can get meconium.
Supposedly,
lungs,
they said that he had a respiratory distress and he died. They then deleted the post, but other people had captured it. They not only faked that, they also faked a gender reveal party.
What?
Yes, they convinced this woman.
Oh, they went all out.
Oh, yes. They convinced a woman to host a gender reveal party. She paid all of her own money, about $300, she said. And then that was it. So they also got shared to GoFundMe. They did raise about $550, which went to them. But they just really went all out for everything with this fake photo of the baby. And I just think it's disgusting.
Yes.
It's totally disgusting because I know people who have lost babies. And yes. It's not anything that touches people's heart. Uh-huh. You know what I'm saying? So you're really preying on people's emotions to do something like that. Because you might not want to donate to somebody's dog. Or you may not want to donate to somebody who's homeless all of a sudden. But whenever somebody loses a baby, that's just like...
Yeah.
The unimaginable.
It's horrible.
Yes, the fucking unimaginable. So I probably would have donated to that fucking GoFundMe too, because I've donated to GoFundMe means I know nothing about the people.
Sorry,
So then they also not only faked posting a death, they faked a memorial. They faked an obituary. And when the police searched the house, they even found an urn with the fake baby's name on it. But this baby never existed.
I don't know what to say. Like,
I know.
That's a lot of work.
That's a lot of work. For $500, no less.
For five, you spent that much on all the shit you faked.
Yeah, yeah. So, that was my... I wanted my true crime to be a little different this week. And I'm like, that is interesting.
My doozy,
what is wrong with people? Like, I what just, is wrong with
I
you?
Can't, it fathoms me because... Okay, so I'm going to go back to Ashley's freshman year of high school when she was so sick and almost died.
Yeah.
We needed so much help then. Mm-hmm, you know, we had people helping us. Like, it was so devastating. And it was just like, all of a sudden, she got so like, right now at this time mm-hmm. is when all this is happening.
And to think that somebody could fake that, though.
Just, and so, yeah. You know, I mean, just so many ER visits and so many hospitals and just doctor's visits to figure out what the hell was wrong with her. She weighed like 80 pounds.
I remember that. And you're just hoping that people see that and feel it upon their heart to help you.
And we did have so many people help us. But
even
like,
with $5.
And that's what kills... Well, even like I had a friend just even bring us dinner one night. I'm mm-hmm. like, you don't understand. Like that means more than just you thinking of us.
Yeah.
Because it took stress off because trying to help with the other two kids plus her being sick, so sick, and I didn't want to leave her by herself because I didn't know if she would wake up from her sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't know. We didn't know what was wrong with her. And so we got so much help from everybody. It was just amazing. And that we weren't faking it and we needed that help. And now
and then
like,
there's people out there
they're out there like mm-hmm. scamming and they make it look bad.
Yes.
Or,
yeah. There was one time I think, my dog almost died. Fucking Jasper Bad Dog over there has had fucking
Jasper Bad Dog
drink bottled water and gourmet food now, fucker.
That's so cute.
I had asked everyone to share it because just hoping that some, and there were people I did not know that nobody, I asked right. my daughter, my husband, did you know these people? That just because somebody shared it, they donated. And you're just hoping to God somebody might see that. Somebody who has the means to help will help right. you. And what's really fucked up is that there's really not much of a crime they can be other than fraud. Like this last couple.
Yeah, it's
fraud. They were charged with theft by deception, theft by unlawful taking of movable property, and receiving stolen property. That's it. That's not much of anything.
It's a slap on the hand. They probably got probation.
What they've done to people. I mean, and especially that woman who brought the police out and cadaver dogs and shit. They're thinking they're dealing with a murdered infant. Yeah.
That's so, just crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's the extent of my story. We can take a break and then
take a break
get
and
into
break,
yours.
Because mine is, kind of told you about it. I'm not going to tell you what it's about, but it kind of hits home. Mm. So it was suggested by Sam Rodriguez. He said I can say his name. That we went to high school with. You said you don't remember him. I knew Sam
you
from middle school.
Show me his face
yeah.
and I recognize his face.
You know
I'm
Sam.
I'm just bad with names.
He was very extroverted and just really good guy. But he asked, hey, I hear you're doing a podcast. I'm like, yeah, we are. So I said, man, I got to get a true crime story. He sent this to me. He's like, do this. I'm like, okay. So it hits home because where this takes place, like I was telling you, the mm-hmm. story I told you about Tina and I, we yeah. went to her 20-year birthday to South Padre Island and then to Madame Wodis. The places this guy
places.
Went was
yeah.
like the same places like we went, and it's a horrible, tragic death. So,
oh, man,
it's crazy. It has voodoo involved in it
ooh,
too.
Exciting.
So.
Okay, so
y'all
come
back
tuned.
After the break.
Yep.
Hello, welcome
Hello.
Back to Cooking with Cunts. Oh, Goth and Bougie.
Goth and Bougie.
So, it's my time for my story.
First, I have to apologize that I have not redone the ad yet.
Yes, we keep saying it every fucking week.
And as soon as we went to break, I said, God, I gotta
redo
that.
We like both looked at
each
other.
And Mel was like, I knew you were gonna say that.
Oh, it's fine.
I'm gonna need somebody to like send me a message in the middle of the week and be like, hey Belle, remember you're gonna redo that ad.
Yes. I'll forget. Like I told you, like I have so much right now I'm doing. Like I'm so tired. Like I'm fading fast right now and I have to go in and work for like five more hours. So my story is the murder of Mark Kilroy. So I had not heard of this story.
Kilroy.
K-I-L-R-O-Y.
Okay.
So I had not heard of this story. Until I say I haven't heard of it, but I feel like when I started reading it, it kind of reminded me of something we had heard in the news like years ago.
Yeah.
Like I was kind of thinking maybe I have heard this because I remember kind of hearing about it in the news. But it is in Texas and it goes into Mexico. So we're going to get right into it. You have anything else you wanted to say?
Nope, I'm listening.
Okay. We booked our hotel, guys.
Yeah.
Woo, so excited. And shout out to Eli for hooking us up. So
with the hotel discount.
Yes. So on March 10th of 1989, Mark and his childhood friend, Bradley Moore, finished their exams early at Texas A&M University. They headed back to Austin to pick him up. Wait, hold on. Kiroy's childhood friend, Bradley Moore, finished his exams early at Texas A&M University. He headed to Austin to pick up Mark.
Oh, okay. Kay. All right, then.
Sorry. Right. So he was at UT. So we have A&M UT, which is ironic because they hate each other. So both of them headed to Santa Fe to pick up two other friends, Bill Huddleston and Brent Martin, before heading to South Padre Island, Texas for spring break.
Okay.
Which is a huge, if you're not from Texas, those of you that are listening, because we have people all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
South Padre Island is South Texas, and it's almost, it's close to Brownsville, Texas, which borders Mexico and Texas. Matamoros. And so that's where our story's going to be going into.
Matamoros.
So they drove for 9 hours. They checked into the Sheraton in South Padre and then headed to the beach. So, like I stated, the story I told you about Tina and I, when we went and we got in the white van and we stayed at this fucking Sheraton.
Oh, wow.
This is where we saw in between our beds, like on the little table. Call and book a private tour of Matamoros, Mexico. And they drove us in the white van.
Dumbasses did it.
Yes, we did it. Dumbasses did it. Two girls, 19, 20 years old, 21. So when they arrived at South Padre Island, there were only a few people there because it was still early in the week, spring break. If you guys watch MTV and watch Spring Break MTV, you see like thousands and thousands of people on the beach. Like it's full before COVID times. Like it's full of people.
Should even do in COVID times.
Before. Yeah, true. Yeah. So thousands of students from the entire U.S. were getting to arrive as the weekend progressed. Of course, there's always beer sponsors and liquor sponsors because that's how they sell so much alcohol is because everyone's partying and stuff. So they were staging at a variety of entertainment events, including free movies, music concerts, calls home, in case you got arrested. just different activities and stuff and opportunities to appear on TV commercials. So Kilroy and Moore made free phone calls to their parents that day. Later that evening, they met up with a group of female students from Purdue University, and they partied until the next morning. So the next morning, they went to the beach in the morning, and after lunch, they went to the. They decided that they were going to go to a beach area behind the hotel where they had a daily Miss Tan Line contest.
Okay.
Once the event was over that afternoon,
they had a what contest?
Tan Line.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so nude.
Miss Tan Line.
Okay,
I thought you said mist. Tan Line. How do you mist?
They got misted.
Line?
They got spray tan.
I don't get it.
So after that, Mark decided he wanted to head back to the hotel for a quick nap, and then they all were planning to go to Mexico, Matamoros, which is what Tina and I did, drove into Matamoros. They left Padre Island that evening and stopped for dinner at a Sonic drive-in, and then in Port Isabel, and they met a group of female students there from the University of Kansas. So people come to South Padre, like they come from all over the U.S., just like in Florida and just like California beaches, you know, everywhere. So they were all also planning to go party in Mexico as well. The women followed his car from Port Isabel to Brownsville, and Brownsville borders Mexico. They parked their cars close to the Gateway International Bridge before crossing the U.S.-Mexico border by foot, which you often do. You used to be able to do without your passport. You could just walk over and they say what nationality or where are you a citizen of the United States? Oh, yeah, you're Texan. Go on, you know.
Yeah.
His friends and the Kansas women spent most of their evening at Sergeant Pepper's nightclub in Matamoros before the groups went their separate ways. Kilroy and his friends then returned to South Padre Island early the next morning. Then on March 13th, he decided again with his friends after they attended another Miss Tan Line contest behind the Sheraton.
That was an awesome contest.
Yes. He met some of his former frat brothers at a condo party. So at around 10:30 p.m. Central Standard Time, him and his friends decided to head back to Matamoros at 10:30 at night because it's where a lot of partying and stuff happens there.
They parked just getting started at 10:30.
Yes. They parked on the border and crossed by foot again. So different night, same thing. That night, Matamoros was flooded with 15,000 spring break tourists from the U.S. on the city's main tourist street, Alvaro Obregón. The sidewalk street and nightclubs were packed with foreign tourists looking to enjoy cheap alcohol and enjoy Mexico's their drinking laws. You could drink at 18 there, so we're here, you could be 21. So,
which is stupid.
Yes.
You can join the army.
I let my kid, my girls drink.
You can get married.
Yeah.
You can have an abortion.
Yeah, but you can't drink alcohol. Don't drink alcohol.
You can go to war. Yeah, you can go to war.
So that's when he passed the jello shots under the doorstop. Remember, we used to pass them when our friends are older. So they got back to Matamoros, and him and his friends decided to go to a bar with the shortest waiting line, which I can imagine how the lines are like that night. They ended up at a bar with rock music and bright neon signs called Los Sombreros. After a few drinks, he and his friends left Los Sombreros and went to London Pub, which rebranded itself as Hard Rock Cafe for spring break.
Oh.
So it was London Pub. Tonight we're going to be Hard Rock Cafe.
I'm just going to use whatever name.
This bar was a louder and wilder than the other one, and so Kira and his friends stood at the bar while other tourists threw beer from the balcony. So, our kind of party.
Mm-hmm.
They met a few women there at the bar and were not seen, and he was not seen by, Kilroy did, and he was not seen by his friends for a while. So around 2 o'clock in the morning, Huddleston just suggested the group head back to South Padre Island so they could get some rest to go out to the beach the next day. As their friends stepped out of London Pub, they saw Kilroy leaning against a car and talking to a woman from Miss Tanline that he'd met. And then across the street, thousands of tourists were leaving the bars and heading back to Brownsville. So others moved in different directions. So it was hard for them to all stay together because it was so packed. So have you ever walked across the border there?
No.
Okay, I have.
I've driven across and I drove right back.
I've done both. Okay, so we went in the white van across and came back. But we walked. We parked and we went to Brownsville shopping, which is almost like Mexico. Like if you've been there, the prices are really good. We walked across. Because we had friends that lived in McAllen, which is not far from Brownsville. And we went to Padre and stuff. And so we walked across the border. And, I mean, I felt safe. Like, it didn't feel, like, not safe. I've actually walked into Juarez before, too. Before I knew it was, like, all the drug cartel and stuff. But we were walking around downtown. Like, I didn't feel, like, unsafe. But now reading this, I'm like, what the fuck was I
thinking? Yeah, like, you dodged
the bullet. Yeah, yeah. Well, I was with my parents when we walked across, so... So, let's see, where was I? We're getting on tangents, sorry. So, they couldn't keep up with each other, and so they were all getting, like, dispersed separated with the crowd and stuff, right? But, you know, and this was before cell phones and stuff.
And they were guys, yeah, I'm sure they didn't hold hands.
You're right. Or, like, I guess we would be holding hands.
I'd be
hands.
Like, hold my hand,
yes, hold my hand, I'm like, I can't see, it's too bright, hold my hand. Yeah. So, the large crowd of people made it difficult again for them, Kilroy and his friends, to walk across the border uninterrupted in a group. Like, how much still cost while my print came out.
Oh, my God.
So, Moore and Martin separated, yes, separated from the group and walked to Garcia's, a popular restaurant store close to the border, which, oh, my fucking God, again, this is where the man dropped us off at Garcia's, which is a store. He introduced us to the fucking owners of this store, and they said, if you need anything, come back here and we'll help you. We'll be glad to call him if you want to leave early, whatever.
Interesting.
So I'm just like, oh my God, this is like everywhere that we were. Like, it just blows my mind. This is in 1989. So we were there in 1996, 97. It's almost 10 years later, but still.
But still, yeah.
It's scary.
Yeah, totally.
So Kilroy stopped at the steps of a house on Alvaro Obregon Street to say goodbye to the women from his tan line. He then waited for Huddleston to walk towards him. Huddleston then ran to a nearby alley to urinate, to pee. Yeah. Kilroy waited for him. By the time Huddleston came out and caught up with the other two near Garcia's, he had vanished. Kira had vanished.
Oh, wow.
They know where he went.
That quickly.
Mm-hmm. They didn't know if he got tired of waiting and maybe went across the border to the car already. Like, they just didn't know.
Right.
His friends searched for him for hours, that little area. You know, so it's 2:30 in the morning, so now they're searching. So for hours, now like the sun's coming up, life's getting back to normal Mexico, partying's done, now we're back to normal Mexican, the way they
just
live.
Just a regular day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where the normal tourists come in that aren't partying, you know. They crossed the border thinking again that he had already crossed to Brownsville and was perhaps waiting near the parked car. His friends did not find, because again, we didn't have cell phones in 1989 this. Mm-hmm. So that you guys that are listening that are younger, we didn't have cell phones.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't. We didn't have pagers in 1989. Mm-hmm. We were in 8th grade.
Yeah. So, I got my first pager as a graduation gift.
Yeah, we got it. Yeah, that's when they were like popular. Mine was purple.
Mm-hmm.
So his friends did not find him at the car, of course, which he just vanished. So they waited a few minutes in Brownsville before returning to Padre Island. They thought that maybe he had left to the hotel with someone else, maybe with Miss Tanline or something, because they'd kind of become friends, you know, and he knew they were going back that way. They woke up the next day at the hotel and still had no idea where
he
was.
So they left the last place they saw him.
Because they looked for hours and couldn't find him, so they thought maybe he had gone back to the hotel. Because they couldn't call. Like, yeah. I would call and say, where are you? Hey,
but
bitch,
then
where
they
are
went
you?
Back to the hotel and he wasn't there.
He wasn't
and
there.
And they just went to sleep, though?
Because he could have hooked up with a girl or something. You know, that's a lot of times that they do at spring break. So they woke up the next day at the hotel. They didn't know where he was. And his friends then contacted the police to report him missing. Like, hey, we're here. We don't know where he is. Something's going on.
Right.
So as he stood on the street, we're going to talk about what happened to him. As he stood on the street, he was lured by a man parked inside, and this is still in Matamoros.
Okay.
While he's peeing, his friend, Cora's peeing, or whatever his name is, whoever's peeing, and the Huddleston is peeing in the alley, and he's waiting. When he came out, he was gone. So, from the time from him peeing to, his, you know, whatever, a few minutes at that.
Yeah.
Where was he? He was lured by a man parked inside a red truck who apparently called him and asked him if he needed a ride. Fucking don't ever get in the car. No matter, even if you're an adult. As he got close to the vehicle, he was grabbed by two men. And he was he was very muscular. And you could tell, like, he was a jock. Like, you could tell.
And this was his friend?
No, no, no. This is Kilroy. This is him.
So how did I know this happened?
You're going to find out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
They caught who did it, so.
Oh, okay.
He was grabbed by two men, Serafin Hernandez Garcia and Malio Fabio Ponce Torres, and wrestled inside the truck. Because of the size and athletic strength, Cora was able to break loose about two blocks down the road after one of the gangsters stopped for a few minutes to catch his breath. Kilroy ran from the truck, but it was eventually intercepted by another vehicle driven by his ally, the gangster allies, and taken at gunpoint. So this time he couldn't fight off. He had to go with them. He was then subdued and handcuffed in the back of the second car. Look him up. Google him and look at a picture of him. Mark Kilroy. He's a very muscular guy. He has a mullet, like a blonde mullet. Like, he's a very, he's a normal looking Texas kid. UT kid. So the gangsters drove Mark through the back streets of the city and past an industrial area. The number of bars and vendor stands in the street began to thin out as they drove Kilroy through a highway in the city's outskirts. Which, if you've driven through Mexico, a lot of times when you get outside, like, the touristy areas, it's like shacks. Like, it's not real houses like we have here. It's like shacks, like, with literally, like, pieces of metal, like, as the roof and as, or, like, straw. Like, it's shacks. So that's what they were getting towards, is that kind of landscape and environment and stuff. They turned down a dirt road that stretched between two cornfields, and they got to a private ranch known as Santa Elena. They left him in the car overnight. Shortly after dawn, the rancher's caretaker went to see Kilroy and feed him bread, eggs, and water. About 12 hours after Kilroy was kidnapped, Constanzo and his men came to see him. They wrapped his face and his mouth with duct tape and walked him through a field to a storage cabin with his hands still tied around his back.
Behind his back?
Mm-hmm. So throughout the night, Kilroy was tortured and sodomized.
Oh my God.
He was then led out to the field, and Constanzo killed him by chopping the back of his neck and head with a machete. His brain... You ready? Are you ready for this? His brain was then boiled in a naganga, which is an African metal pot that Constanza used to stew human and animal remains.
Oh my God.
Mark's legs were then chopped off above his knees.
Did they do that in order to eat it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
It's got voodoo. So his legs were also chopped off above his knees to facilitate his burial. Then a wire was inserted into his spinal cord to pull the bones out once the body decomposed.
Mm.
So next time we're in Mexico and you see, like, the bones being sold, like, in stores and stuff, just think twice. Because they have weird shit they sell in those stores. Yes. So the cult members then dug a hole on the grounds and buried his corpse, along with thousands of other bodies that they have already done this to. So this is the investigation. The search for his, Mark initially began as a routine missing persons investigation. Students that were reported missing in Matamoros in the past would often turn up in the following days. You know, like, that's what his friends thought with the hangover, or just not sure what happened, you know.
But a friend was getting laid.
Right. But Mark would, because, and plus, prostitution's legal there. So, you know, who knows? Mark was one of the 60 people who had disappeared in Matamoros in the first 3 months of 1989.
60 people.
First 3 months. But his case drew more attention in the U.S. because his uncle, Ken Kilroy, worked at the United States Customs Services in Los Angeles.
Oh.
So when the news reached his uncle, a police task force was created in Brownsville to search for Kilroy. Alarmed with the bad publicity and his disappearance and the potential effects of tourism in Matamoros, because it's a huge tourism.
Yeah.
Like, it's huge. Not so much anymore because of the drug cartel and stuff, but yeah. So the local police officers tried to shift the blame and suggested that he disappeared in Brownsville and not in Matamoros.
Mm-hmm.
But like his friend said, he never went to Brownsville. Like, mm-hmm. he never crossed the border with us. We never saw him after I peed in the alley and he was standing there. He was gone. One of the commanders assigned Mexican agents to U.S. officials to accompany them in Matamoros. Together, they questioned informants, potential witnesses, and worked on tips provided by their sources and just retraced everything from that night, like where he was throughout the night, who he talked to, which a lot of them were the Americans, like the women and stuff. So it wasn't that they were there still, but the bar workers and stuff may have seen him. But I can imagine, after all these people that are there, 15,000 people, like...
Right.
The blonde head with the mullet. Like, there were probably tons of them there with mullets in 1989. So both Mexican and U.S. authorities suspected that his disappearance involved foul play. They speculated that he could have been a victim of drug-related violence or robbery killing, but they were short on leads to make any firm conclusions. So when his friends reported the disappearance, custom agents went with them to Matamoros to help retrace their steps. Texan officials contacted the U.S. consulate in Matamoros and asked investigators to carry out a search with Kilroy's uncle and with clues and stuff just to go try to find... They're just trying to find him and send descriptions like to the jails and the hospitals because he could have been hurt or something hit by a car.
At this point, they just don't know.
Which he's dead. They just don't know. So the investigators then hired a hypnotist to see if he could figure out some additional clues. From like the friends and stuff. Yeah. So under hypnosis, Moore stated that he saw a young Hispanic man wearing a blue plaid shirt with a visible scar across his face, talking to Mark before he disappeared. He recalled that the man walked up to him and told him, "Hey, don't I know you from somewhere?" Which a lot of times they do. Yeah. That's how they get you. And though Huddleston said he was not sure if Kilroy responded back, but none of his friends were able to precisely recall the exact moment or place where he disappeared. So the investigators deduced his story that Kilroy was kidnapped for robbery or ransom. So, yeah. The first option seemed the most likely because his abductors had not called for a payment. They believed that Kilroy's body was probably dumped in a remote location. So he was just kidnapped or murdered and just dumped. And then helicopters and terrain vehicles of the United States Border Patrol were called in to look in the Rio Grande River. But his body, of course, was not found. That's because it's fucking buried. So...
Well, also, it's kind of hard to find in that river.
So, during the investigation, his parents headed to Rio Grande Valley and circulated more than 20,000 handouts throughout the region and offered a $15,000 reward to anyone who could help locate their son. They met with Attorney General Jim Maddox, which we know Jim Maddox's name, and Texas Governor William Clements, and U.S. Senator Lloyd Benson to assist them on the case. Texas officials told his parents that they were planning to talk to the Tamaulipas governor, Americo Villarreal Guerrero, and I don't speak Spanish, so I'm sorry if I'm messing this up. I can say Matamoros, and get people from Matamoros were more involved in their son's disappearance, which, I mean, it's a third world country there. Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of poor people. Like, the kids, chicle, like, it's poor. You know, so I would think $15,000 is a lot of money. For them, that's like a lifetime. That's, I mean, that's
real.
2 years of their income, pretty much. So, people from Kilroy's hometown traveled to Matamoros and issued flyers as well, offering a reward to anyone who could provide information on his safe return as well. So, not only are his parents offering a reward, now people from his hometown are as well. U.S. authorities had praised the efforts of the Mexican federal police on the case, but they distrusted the state and the officials because they're corrupt. Because a lot of times they're in with the drug cartel. So they suspected that because state and local authorities were acting slowly and not sharing enough information, his murderers had insiders within their ranks.
Oh, I'm sure.
So on March 26, 1989, the case was highlighted on national television in the crime show America's Most Wanted.
Oh.
This gave the case nationwide attention and generated several phone calls and letters to people giving clues on Mark's disappearance. And
that was an awesome show.
It was so good. Mm-hmm. Yes. So there, it gave, like, hopefully people would call in about the whereabouts.
Right.
Because that helped find a lot of people. It really did. So, however, the police stated that none of the leads generated were solid enough. They didn't get anything solid enough to, like, pursue anything. They had, like, clues and stuff. But
yeah.
People sometimes call into their shows and are like, they just want money, you know.
Yeah.
So, a few days later, though, his parents returned to Santa Fe. Santa Fe residents raised money through garage sales, car washes to help his parents and family to continue their search. And in addition, his parents went to the University of Texas at Austin to withdraw their son from school. Can you imagine going to their college? I can't imagine something happening to Caitlin. I mean, going there.
I need to officially withdraw them because they're gone.
They're gone, and we don't know where they are. They're not coming back, and packing up her apartment. Mm-mm. Like, I couldn't do it. Mm-mm. Like, you would have to be there helping me. Mm-hmm. No, like, I could not do it. Like, I would be on set. I just couldn't do it. I don't know. I would just throw it on. I don't know. Just keep it. Disperse it. I don't know. On a side note, really fast, I have a new grandchild I forgot to tell you about. I have a guinea pig. His name's Henry, and it's white, and he's fluffy, and I have to see him every time I call her because he's so damn cute, and I cannot wait to meet my grandson. Okay, carry on. So on April 1st of 1989, Mexican state authorities were stationed at a routine checkpoint near Santa Elena when they saw a vehicle that ran through the checkpoint without stopping. The vehicle had crossed the international border from Texas and sped through Mexican Federal Highway 2. These bitches have, like, machine guns. Like, have you seen the guns that the Mexican Border Patrol carries?
Right.
It's not, like, a gun. It's a gun gun.
Right. It's a gun gun.
It's a gun gun. So, which connects Matamoros and Reynosa. The man driving the vehicle was Serafin, who had kidnapped Kilroy weeks earlier. Instead of turning on their police sirens, the police decided to follow him.
But they did not know who he was.
They did not know who he was. But for him to do that, something was really fishy.
Yeah.
Because they know better. You're supposed to stop and get checkpoints. Mm-hmm,
yeah, why would he? Yeah.
So they decided to follow the truck. And
especially, you would think he would want to not draw attention to himself.
Right. First mistake. So they followed him using an unmarked vehicle. It led him to the ranch. They pulled off to a distance and just kind of watched. After about 30 minutes, Serafin took off from the ranch and headed back to the city. The officers decided to make their move to the ranch. In a quick search, the police discovered Colt paraphernalia and marijuana traces. Instead of arresting Serafin, the police decided to continue gathering more evidence on the suspected criminal activities at the ranch and organized crime members involved with the Hernandez family. They used informants in Matamoros to inquire on family family activities at Santa Elena in order to make a series of crucial arrests. On April 9th, 1989, they returned with several other policemen, arrested Serafin, his uncle Elio, cult members David Serna Valdez and Sergio Martinez Salinas, and Domingo Reyes Bestamente. I'm not sure how you say it. He's the ranch's caretaker who actually fed Mark while in custody. They were very relaxed, of course, you know. They were sent to prison while the police interrogated the caretaker of the ranch. The person revealed to the police that the ranch had frequent visitors from Serafin's criminal group. The ranch's caretaker identified Kilroy through a photograph and stated that he saw him at the ranch. The caretaker told the police, "I saw him," and then pointed to the shack at the ranch.
Oh, damn.
So when the police interrogated Serafin separately, he confessed to aiding in his murder and what they had done. So that's how they found out how he was killed.
Well, yes.
Over the course of several months.
So the caretaker must have seen other people too.
Right. So what he's saying is that he also confessed to his murder and that several other people were killed over the course of several months at Santa Elena.
Wow.
Because it was a cult. There was voodoo and all this stuff, satanic cult. But they were also doing voodoo, apparently, as well. Mm-hmm. So, Serafin identified Costanzo and Aldrete as the heads of the group. He said that Costanzo had ordered the slayings as part of a sacrificial ritual. Costanzo believed that by sacrificing his victims, those doing the sacrifice were ensured strength, abundance, and immunity from law enforcement and injury.
Oh,
how'd that work out for you?
Right.
So, specifically, he said that Kilroy was chosen at random because Costanzo had ordered his men to find a white Anglo male to sacrifice, so a gringo.
Right.
He said that Kilroy was killed by Costanzo with a machete blow, his body was buried at the ranch. and described exactly how he was killed and how his legs were cut off and they ate his brains. He agreed to take the police to the exact spot where his body was. It was marked by a wire piece coming out of the dirt because it's inserted into his spine. He stated that the wire was attached to his spinal cord so they could be able to pull out the bones and wear them as necklaces after the body decomposed. April 11th, 1989, the police took Serafin and the four other suspects to Santa Elena and asked Serafin to show the police where his remains were kept. That afternoon, they were forced at gunpoint to spend several hours digging up the graves. Once Kilroy's corpse had been exhumed, the police observed that his legs were missing. They explained that the amputations were not a procedure of the ritual, but were done for simply burying them.
No, because they didn't dig a grave big enough.
Big enough, okay. After the excavation concluded,
they should have dug it vertically.
Yes.
For the thing you shared on Facebook. Did you share that? About sharing that? You didn't.
I think so. I don't remember. Oh, I share so much stuff. So the suspects had unearthed 15 mutilated bodies, including Kilroy's. All males who had been killed over a period of 9 months. 15.
Wow.
Over 9 months. His Mark's corpse was officially identified after the Brownsville police matched his dental records with the teeth found at the scene. Investigators concluded that most of the victims were rival drug dealers of Constanza and not random sacrificial victims of the cult, as Mark was. Three of the 15 bodies were never identified, which I hate bodies not being identified because people are missing their loved ones. It just kills me. Mm-hmm. At Santa Elena, the Mexican police also seized 110 kilograms of marijuana, so 243 pounds of marijuana, 108 grams of cocaine, 12 firearms.
What year was that?
1989.
Okay, I was about to say, maybe
12 firearms,
that year.
12 firearms, including 3 submachine guns, 11 vehicles, some equipped with telephones, inside an iron pot.
Wow, some equipped with telephones?
Inside an iron pot, investigators discovered remains of human brain, a goat's head, chicken feet, a turtle, several herbs, a horseshoe, and coins mixed with animal blood. They found no signs of cannibalism.
Huh.
But they know that they confessed to eating the brain.
So why? What are they looking for as far as...
Sorry, my daughter always interrupts. She didn't know we were recording. It's fine, Caitlin. I love you.
I was asking that... If there were brains and stuff found in a bowl or in a pot, wouldn't that be signs of cannibalism?
Yes.
Like, what signs are they
looking for? I don't know what signs
are. Are they looking for, like, poop with human remains in it?
I don't know.
What the crap is signs of cannibalism?
But they stayed, I mean, they're eating their brain.
And they told them they did.
Yes.
Okay.
This is crazy.
Carry on.
So on April 12th, the detainees were taken to the headquarters of the Mexican Federal Judicial Police in Matamoros for an informal press conference. Okay. So they took the detainees, the people they arrested, to an informal press conference for them to be seen by everybody.
Wow.
Yes. So more than 250 international journalists arrived at the scene to take pictures and ask them questions. The four suspects were paraded from the building's balcony and were allowed to answer questions from reporters.
Like a press conference.
Yes.
But like with a celebrity.
Yes.
Wow.
But they're taking pictures of them, so they're getting put out there for people. But they're going to be targeted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so maybe that's why they did it. I don't know. So, yes, they paraded them in there on the building's balcony. They were allowed to answer questions from reporters. Ilio stated that he was an ordained executioner under Costanzo and that Mark was murdered by Costanzo. As the camera zoomed in on the suspects, Ilio showed his membership scars on his shoulders, back, arms, and chest, where were arrow-like cuts made with a hot blade. The marks were given to selected cult members with the authority to perform human sacrifice.
Hmm.
So on April 13th of 1989, a religious ceremony initially intended to revive hope for Mark's safe return turned into a memorial service a day after his body was discovered. The service was held out at Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church in Santa Fe. So many people showed up. The press showed up. It was just a huge ordeal. And I just can't imagine as parents. I just feel horrible for them. I don't know. I feel horrible for them. I just don't know. What was it going to say here? Let me hold on a second. So his father spoke about the murder and told the press that they were not angry with the killers. Bitch, I would be there with a gun ready to kill them.
Yeah.
He hoped that if and when
I'm not the response.
No, I'm not on that. Not my kids. But those responsible for his death would go to heaven and see their son and can apologize him for their wrongdoing. Kirwa's mother told others to pray for the murderers. April 15, 1989, his parents met with U.S. President George W. Bush and William Bennett. Yes, not George Bush. George Sr., not Jr. Wait, which one's which? George Bush is son George Bush.
W is Jr. and H is Sr.
So it's George H.W. Bush. So this is Sr.
Fuck, I don't know.
This is the 80s. So this was older. This was dad.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know our history right now. Who headed the Office of National Drug Control. See, they told the politicians that for every drug consumer, there's a victim who suffers from their addiction. Which is true.
Yeah.
Two weeks after the bodies were exhumed from Santa Elena, the Mexican federal police returned to the ranch early in the morning to burn down the shack and lay a wooden cross above the ashes. Reportedly, the police took a Curandero folk healer to purify the shack before burning it down. The healer went inside the house and said a few prayers, sprinkled the floor with salt, because they're very suspicious as well. Mm-hmm. And concluded by making the sign of the cross. The policeman then proceeded to spray gasoline around the shack before setting it on fire. The Mexican government offered no official explanation for their actions, but a source close to the investigation stated that the motives were supernatural in nature.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So they said that they knew the shack meant a lot to Costanzo and burning it would make him go insane. Mm-hmm. So that's why they did it. And they hit him where it hurts. So the next morning, Costanzo reportedly went into a rage after the arson was shown on national television.
So, darn.
Now they're hunting for the cult members. Costanzo prompted the downfall of his cult. He attracted international attention and forced the Mexican government to focus his efforts. Where'd it go? Focus his efforts. I got lost here. Sorry, guys. To focus their efforts on bringing him and those involved to justice. So on April 11th, 1989, the day the bodies were exhumed from Santa Elena, Costanza fled to a Holiday Inn to Brownsville before flying from McAllen, Texas to Mexico City, where he had an apartment. He escaped with Eldreta, Martin, Quintina, Rodriguez, Amar, Francisco, Oria, Ochoa, and Alvaro de Leon.
Oh, those are Valdez. I thought that was one person's name.
No, there's like different... Chiquita, Juanita, Bonita. U.S. and Mexican law enforcement agency.
It's like, oh my God. I know sometimes they'll have a few
so
names.
The law enforcement agencies from U.S. and Mexico carried out an international manhunt to locate him and the rest of his cult members. The police believed that he had possibly fled to Miami to visit his mother, but he wasn't. He was in Mexico City. He hid with several of his followers for short periods of time. Then rumors began to surface that he was seen in Chicago. Other rumors suggested that he was spotted in schools throughout the Rio Grande Valley and that...
So he was just all over the place.
Yes, and they vowed to kidnap children for every jailed cult member. Like, he was, you know, blowing smoke out his ass and shit, you know. So I'm gonna skip ahead here.
Hey, do you remember when we were gonna move to Chicago?
That was a long time ago.
That was a long time ago. Chicago.
So he was last seen driving a 1989 Mercedes-Benz in Brownsville in Matamoros. Law enforcement raided Aldreda's house.
That would have been a brand new Benz.
Yes, where they discovered an altar and several religious images and cult stuff. They also stated that the house's interior was covered with blood in the Cameron County Sheriff's Office. Authorities released a wanted poster for Costanzo, stating that he was extremely dangerous and indicted him on Aldrate for aggravated kidnapping and murder. Both were also indicted by a state jury in McAllen, so not only in Mexico, but also in Texas, mm-hmm. they've been, bitch, we don't play in Texas, right? You're gonna get killed. So, along with 11 other cult members, stating everything that they had done. So on April 17th of 89, I told you this is a longer one, I'm sorry. Serafin Hernandez Rivera Sr., it's one name, a Brownsville native, was arrested in Houston by DEA and Texas Department of Public Safety agents. Federal charges were filed against him for importing marijuana, possession, and conspiracy. Two other men implicated with him were Quintana Rodriguez and Ponce Torres, both Mexican citizens, both there at the ranch when all that happened. So, they searched the Houston home, found tons of drugs and stuff.
Drugs or marijuana?
Marijuana.
That is not
and
a drug.
Cocaine.
Okay.
So drugs, yes. So April 17th in Mexico City, the police raided one of Costanzo's properties in Atizapan. I don't know. They discovered piles of homosexual pornography and a hidden ritual chamber with an altar. That's why he killed only men. So this prompted the police to question people in Mexico City's homosexual community to see if they had any leads on Costanzo's whereabouts. Because they're trying to find him because he's the leader of this crap. So the Mexican police stated that no evidence was found on the scene to link Costanzo to his men to any murders committed there. But people were starting to go missing again.
Yeah.
So, why? Of course, they're going to think it's them, right? So the police also discovered that Aldrete's purse and other belongings were left behind, which prompted them to conclude that Costanzo probably murdered... Oh, so this was another lady that was there at the apartment as well that was with him that they found murdered. And so they found, like, all her stuff left behind. So that's why they're thinking Costanzo may have done that as a ritual and then buried her somewhere in the city. Let's see. I'm going to skip ahead because this is just the same thing, kind of telling us the story of the same thing. So I'm going to skip ahead. All right. So this is the death of Costanzo. The Mexico City Police Department noticed that the Madame Juarez killings were similar to murders carried out in Mexico City between 87 and 89. Mm-hmm. So he had moved to Madame Juarez.
Right.
After consulting local witchcraft practitioners and sorcerers, the police had heard that Costanzo was probably hiding in...
Oh my god,
Cowdamec?
Oh my god, how little does this have to be?
Do you need my glasses?
Cowdamec. I can't see it, it's too little.
Okay, I'm gonna spell it. C-U-A-U-H-T-E-M-O-C.
Wait, you're talking too fast.
C-U-A-U-H-T-E-M-O-C. It's a city borough of Mexico City.
Cuauhtemo.
Okay.
T-E-M-O, what'd you say?
T-E-M-O-C. And the E has the little thing over the accent thing.
Wow. Cuauhtemoc.
Okay. Other contacts told the police that there was an address interested in the Veronica Enzura's neighborhood. Next to what Belle said. The police department sent 16 officers to search the area.
16?
16.
Be specific.
At a supermarket, they interrogated a shoemaker who claimed to have seen a woman who matched Aldrete's description, who, you know, he had murdered. The police, oh my god, I'm losing my place. By the end of the week, the police concluded that the man was De Leon and that he was buying groceries for Costanzo. On May 6, 1989, the police surrounded the building and waited for traffic to subside before raiding the premises. However, a black vehicle pulled up in the front of the apartment complex and the police walked over to investigate. Costanzo noticed the police from the window of his apartment, opened fire at the officers who were at ground level. Costanzo threw golden coins and paper money from the window and burned some of his money on a stove.
Okay.
He then eventually ran out of ammunition and began to lose his patience. After about 45 minutes and worried of the imminent capture, Costanzo ordered De Leon to kill him and Quintino Rodriguez.
Wow.
So murder-suicide. So De Leon hesitated at the beginning, but Costanzo hit him in the face and told him that he would suffer in hell if he did not do as he commanded.
Wow.
He hugged them both and stood in front of them before he opened fire and killed the two with the machine gun inside a closet. When the police climbed up the stairs and made it to Costanza's smoke-filled apartment, Aldrete ran from the door screaming that Costanzo was dead. De Leon later confessed that Costanzo had lost his mind and was saying that everything was lost and that no one was going to have money. When the police raid forced him to barricade himself in his apartment. He also stated that he participated in Kiroy's murder and other killings at Santa Elena, but both agreed that Costanzo did most of the killings himself. Which, of course, he's dead now, so you can't say anything else otherwise. So... the criminal sentences, they were all the ones that were caught and that didn't get killed. Oria Ochoa was admitted to a hospital after being diagnosed with AIDS. The police said that he and Aldrete were Constanza's lovers, but that Aldrete showed no signs of the disease in her immune system. And then Alcatila, she died on February 11th, 1990.
A year later.
From AIDS. Mm-hmm. And then June 2nd, 89, Salvador Vidal Garcia Alarcon, which is one name, was indicted for drug trafficking. He was linked to Costanza by Aldrete and other cult members who claimed he acted as a group's contact. He was, Aldrete said that Costanza told her that he had killed two men to favor Garcia Alarcon. I'm trying to see where his sentence is. I know it's as long. I'm sorry, guys. He was not charged with Kilroy's murder or for any other killings conducted by Constanza's group.
Huh.
So he was let go. August of 90, De Leon was sentenced to 30 years in prison for killing Costanza and Quintina Rodriguez. Yes. Wow. Uh-huh.
Got in jail for killing them.
Yes. Uh-huh. His bond was $500.
Hmm. Well, that's
June 10th of 83, drug trafficking charges against Avida and Ponce Torres were dropped in the U.S. without a stated reason. May 3rd, 1994, Aldrete was sentenced to 62 years in prison. Yes. Hmm. So, that's pretty much it. Everyone else got a slap on the hand for the most part, you know. So, let me really fast go over here. I'm almost done, guys. I'm sorry.
We need to be clear. This was a cult.
It was a cult.
Because true practitioners of voodoo, like any religion, there are good guys and there are bad guys.
Right.
And just like they questioned with people who are sorcerers and some of the witchcraft practitioners, they weren't out killing people.
Right. This is a cult where they took something from this religion, this witchcraft, this took for voodoo, and they made it into their own religion. Yeah. And they're tricking people, like, drink the juice.
Yeah,
it's good.
Drink the Kool-Aid, yeah.
And that's a cult. And so that's what he had was a cult.
Yeah.
Nowhere, anywhere does it say you're going to, just like the man that was, the sorcerer that was sucking spit out of them. Like, that's a cult. Yes. Yeah.
It's not.
So 2 months after Kilroy was confirmed dead, his parents founded the Mark Kilroy Foundation, which promotes drug awareness, education, and prevention through the Just Say No campaign. Mark's dream was to become a doctor after college, so his parents decided to help others and continue his dream through this program. So since 1994, the foundation has sponsored and worked alongside Substance Abuse Free Environment, SAFE, which, you know, if your kids are in school, you have Red Ribbon Week. It's a nonprofit community group, which we all know about. Both of them partner with the Santa Fe local government, its school system, and the full-time and part-time counselors visit school campuses during the academic school year to talk about kids about drugs and stuff. It's the bird. They offer free outdoor activities just to keep kids out of trouble and away from drugs. So his father, the purpose of these summer activities is to keep the youth, again, distracted, away from drugs. They still raise money, and the foundation that they have, that they started in 1999, signed an agreement with the U.S. federal government to receive 10 yearly grants of $100,000. By the 10th year, the government intended to stop the funding and expect the foundation to be self-supporting. However, Kilroy's parents stated that the yearly expenses exceeded $160,000.
Wow.
So, and that they would need to find new ways to make up the deficit. So, the Mark Kilroy Foundation was one of the five nonprofit organizations in Galveston County that receives proceeds from the Bingo Place in Lamarck, Texas. They also receive proceeds from sales of the book Sacrifice, which was written by his dad, Bob Stewart, in 1990. So besides counseling children, teenagers with drug advice, his parents advise young people, you know, if you plan to travel, be safe. After Kilroy was confirmed dead, the media framed the drug group and their religious practices as Satanist. Mm-hmm. For the most part, the U.S. media labeled the group as Satanist and gave little mention to the drug-related violence that was widespread in northern Mexico. Mm. So they took it away from they said, oh, it's satanic cult ritual.
Yeah, they just labeled
instead
it.
Instead of what it really was. It was a murder. It was a murder.
To fit their narrative.
Yes. Reports concluded that because human body parts were found inside a large metal pot, the group practiced cannibalism, which they're saying they didn't see any signs of. But I'm like, again, with you.
But they admitted it.
But if you see fucking human remains and brain in a pot, you know, So that's my story. So on the 20th anniversary of their son's murder, his parents visited the Rio Grande Valley in Matamoros to thank the people who had supported them in their search for their son. His father stated that the people were supportive and called the police whenever they saw something suspicious that they thought was related to their son's disappearance. He said that it was easier to overcome their son's death because of the support they received. just to help them grieve and help them get through it.
Yeah.
His mother said she received a cross from a Brownsville woman when she was searching for her son in 1989. Aww. It's a reminder every time that I know that the Lord was involved in everything, she said, while she touched and showed the cross around her neck. Aww. And that's the story, the tragic story of the murder of Mark Kilroy.
Wow.
So
that is very, very sad.
And now that I've, like, I started reading, I'm like, I think I remember that being in the news.
Yeah, we would have been going into ninth grade.
But we just didn't pay attention to news at that time. No, but my parents always had it on, so, like, I remember hearing about something to this.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's one of the reasons why my mom was like, you're never going to spring break at the beach, you know? Like, yeah. So, that's my story.
Oh, that's very sad.
I know, right?
I'm going to have to look up a picture of him now.
Yes. So, my serial killer's next week.
Yes.
I have no idea who the fuck I'm doing. So, if you have suggestions, message me.
No. It's mine.
Oh, no, it's yours.
It's mine.
It's Belle Serial Killer,
and I do know who I'm doing.
She knows who she's doing. That's right.
Yes, because yours really...
Yes.
We're on track. We know what we're doing.
It's a shit show. We know.
Yes, we know what we're doing. No, it's mine.
It's been a long day.
And that will release the week before we go to New Orleans.
Yes.
Yep.
That's 2 weeks.
I know. I'm so excited.
My milkshake brings all the boys to where you the dance. You know what I'm talking about?
I will walk right past you and meet you in the street.
No, you won't. We have to have fun. These people will never see us again.
Oh, they'll see me again.
It's going to be some wild and crazy times.
Wild and crazy. It's going to be good times, yes. Wait. So, you guys should join Patreon because we are going live on Tuesday the 22nd.
Yes.
And only our patrons will get to see that.
Yes.
And get to hear my story ahead of time.
Yes, and you guys miss, like, the behind-the-scenes stuff. Mm-hmm. You get to see, like, our beautiful faces. And we have a really cool art piece.
And our facial expressions to each other, especially mine.
Yeah, you see why she makes me fucking laugh all the time. My goofy giggle. But this picture, guys, that we're going to have in our background, we'll share it with our patrons. But it is pretty amazing. Like,
it's us.
It's us. It's an amazing picture. If we ever, like, really make it really big, which we will someday.
Does she have gum on her shoe?
Yes. It's so us. We have to hang this if we ever get a studio. Yes. Like,
I love it.
I stole it from my daughter. One of her friends at college painted it.
And you know what? Someday she's going to be like, I recognize that.
Yes. And so, if I find out the artist, I definitely want to give him a shout out because it's a beautiful piece.
Yeah, we can put it right up there the way we were on the mantle.
Yeah. So... All right, guys.
Normal stuff. What is it? Email, podcast?
Oh.
No, email,
We already talked
Twitter.
About our Patreon, so go to Patreon. please go to our patreon.com/ Gotham Bougie Podcast. And, guys, we have so many listeners. We need you guys to become patrons because we want, even if you have $5 a month, it's a freaking Starbucks drink.
$5.
Please. I'm begging you.
And then you'll get access to early shows, our live. We're going to restructure our tiers soon, so...
And we're like a broken record, we know, but if you guys would just join, we would stop being broken records, just saying. And then also, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, the tweeter.
My dad calls it tweeter. Yeah. He is such a boomer, it's so funny.
I know.
God,
okay, boomer.
Kills me. I say that to him and he'll go, huh?
So, go and find us. We love all the interaction. We're getting so much more interactions with you guys, and I love that. It's a lot of fun, so... You guys can go watch me on TikTok if you want, because I do promote our podcast on there as well. So I will get Belle on there, maybe one or two. Belle Titsworth.
All one word?
Uh-huh.
See, on Instagram, I had to do dots in mine because there was already somebody else.
With Hell's Bells?
Yeah. No, so it's Hell's Bell. So it's Hell's with an S dot Bell, B-E-L-L dot 666.
Oh, my goodness. I'm just Mel Titsworth, guys, everywhere.
Well, because there's no other Bells.
No, it's just funny. My last name is hilarious. My doctor worked for
Have you ever Googled to see if there is any other?
There's another Melanie Titsworth.
There really is?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, Titsworth.
Anyway, yes, so you can find Mel on Instagram. You can find me on Instagram. You can find us both on Gotham Bougie. Is that everything?
That's everything. That's all.
All right, though.
That's it. So y'all come back now.
You hear?